now.
The Chris Lynch Show, thanks to A1 Homes Christchurch. Discover the easy way for the home on Newstalk ZB.
It is Newstalk ZB with Chris Lynch. To make contact with me this morning, 0800 80 1080. You can also text me on 9292 ZBZB. And the Facebook page is facebook.com/ChrisLynchZB. There is plenty of issues to discuss on this morning's program. And let's get to the big one right now. Well, as we all know, that suicide rates in Canterbury appear to be on the increase. How do we stop this? Do we need more funding? Is it more to do with the family breakdown? Let's just have a decent discussion about this. I'm joined by Dr. Sue Bagshaw from 298 Youth Health Centre here in Christchurch. Sue, good morning to you and thank you so much for your time this morning.
Good morning, Chris.
The results, according to some suicide prevention groups, are not surprising, they're saying to me. What do you say?
Well, I think things are going up and up, and I think this is a worldwide phenomenon. Depression is becoming, WHO are forecasting by 2020 it will be the world's, depression will be the world's leading cause of disability and morbidity. So in that context, it's not surprising. But at the same time, I don't think we should be complacent with the suicide, is that it's such a complex issue, in that the things leading up to it are so complex, it's so multifactorial, there's no one simple answer. So what we have to look at is a broad range of issues that we can perhaps work on that may be resulting in a less suicide.
Do you have any thoughts on why perhaps Canterbury has the highest rates per population in this country?
Well, it will be very easy to say it's the earthquake. We know that many natural disasters, like any thing that causes trauma, can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder, which can is a very complex disorder, which usually obviously is post-trauma, but can take the form of anxiety, take the form of depression, can take the form of being on hyper-alert the whole time. Conversely, really thriving on more risk rather than sort of heading away from risk. So I think it's really complex, but at the same time, we can do stuff to help. And so long as we're aware of the things that we can do to help and do them, then we might get some movement going.
Dr. Bagshaw, are we relying too much, with the greatest respect, on the resources of medical health professionals without looking at the resources that we have within ourselves or our close family and friends network? Is that part of the problem that you believe is happening in this city?
Look, we did a literature review of that's all the kind of evidence, all the research studies that have kind of been done worldwide post-disaster is what really helps. And what we found out of 2,000 studies that we looked at was that social cohesion, i.e. support groups, networks, good relationships with your neighbours, with your family, with your community, actually is a solution. It's also the answer to the preparation for the next one, because there will be a next one. There's going to be more and more natural disasters in terms of flooding, fire, never mind earthquakes. So I think, yes, there is a solution. We can actually do it. And it sounds simple, but it's more difficult than it sounds, unfortunately. You know, making relationships with other people seems to be getting harder, not easier.
Why do you think that is?
I think part of it is the fact that we're now using electronics to communicate. Yeah. And electronics are great in terms of, you know, it's words, we're communicating in one way, but we're not communicating in the body language way, in the tone, you know, voice tone way, and you miss 70% of communication doing that. And it's very hard, I think. I mean, young people might disagree with me, and I'm happy for them to do that, but I think it's really hard to make a good relationship that's a two-way communication dialogue that's lasting, that has all that RC empathy stuff going on by text.
I agree with you. And I worry, Sue, that some of the social service agencies in this country now feel that they have to align themselves with what young people are doing. So if young people are feeling depressed or suicidal now, instead of picking up the phone or talking to somebody, the options there available to text. And I just wonder whether that's counterproductive given what you've just told me.
Well, I think it's a good first step. I mean, I think it's a good first barrier, you know, leaping over the barrier of reaching out to somebody, which is risky because you're putting yourself on the line and you're putting yourself open to criticism, possibly, and judgment. So I think it's a good first step, but so long as it leads on to more. So the texting leads on to voice stuff. The voice stuff leads on to meeting. So it's not the only thing. It's the first step towards a whole pathway of forming a relationship with somebody.
You make a really interesting point how smart technology or smartphones, although they can keep us connected, but not necessarily well connected in a society that relies on human face-to-face communication. More often than not now, it's easy for me to get, you know, text messages or Facebook messages from people who may be distressed, but long gone are the days when they pick up the phone.
Yep, and it's too scary.
It's a worry.
Because, yeah, it is, absolutely. But at the same time, what we need to do is learn to use our technology, learn to use our smartphones in a more constructive way. Rather, you know, I dread to think how much time we spend playing games. And sometimes that's good. You know, we need a bit of relaxation. We need a bit of time out, but not an inordinate amount of time out, and not replacing playing board games, having dinner with the family, having going out to join a club, those kind of things. It's neither or, it's both. We have to do both, so that we can actually be much more connected. You know, it's really interesting. After the wars, a load of people formed a whole load of clubs. You know, there's Rotary and Kiwanis and Lions and all these wonderful clubs. They're all dying because nobody's joining them anymore. And yes, okay, they're a bit outmoded, but we need those social groups, those social opportunities to connect more than ever now, and that it's just not happening.
Interesting that the current stats do suggest that one reason why many of us can be depressed is social isolation. So as you've pointed out, we can do all the texts we like on our cell phones, but that communication is not realised in a human one-on-one interaction, so we can still feel socially isolated.
Yeah. So, I mean, young people will tell me that they get a lot out of their connections with their Facebook friends and with from all over the world, and that gives me hope because hopefully that will take away that xenophobic prejudice stuff because you know somebody who's from another place in the world. But at the same time, it can't be just that. It'll be both. It can't be just texting. Soon, you won't have to leave your home. You don't go shopping, it's all online, and you won't have to leave your house. The social phobia stats, I think, will get even worse because the less contact you have with other people, the more frightened you are of it.
I know you haven't had a decent chance to read this report, but there is a report in other media suggesting that 4 out of 5, I think it was primary age children, are showing signs of post-traumatic stress. And I just wondered how real that is and whether we run the risk sometimes, though, of overplaying that, because some of these children weren't even around when the earthquakes happened. And so I do believe, and I want to know what you think, Sue, that parents do have a responsibility, whether they like it or not, to sometimes actually put on a brave face for the benefits of the well-being of their children.
Well, I think that's true. I think the thing about the earthquake is that we know from a load of research from all parts of the world that a natural disaster really affects everybody in the whole society. Mm. Now, if your brain's still developing at a very early age, even in utero, there's some interesting studies from Canada, even in utero, that affects your future brain development. And so what we're seeing now is people who were born or who were the first 3 years of life during the series of earthquakes that we had, because remember, it wasn't a one-off.
Yes.
It was a series. It was a repetitive injury, basically. And all that fear that was around, whether we like it or not, you know, even a brave face, we were still frightened. Come on.
Of course.
We were all frightened. Now, some of us handled that really well because we had a whole background of connections with other people. We had security in ourselves and we handled it fine. It was over and done with. Others who didn't have all those advantages have handled it much less easily, but the more good things happen, the more you have those social connections, the less that becomes. Now, for children, it actually does change their brain structure. We've got lots of evidence to show that. So what we need is to make sure that those children who are coming through now into primary school, and I keep telling the Ministry of Health, they'll become adolescents soon, and they'll enter that phase where they've got a heightened alert anyway because of their stage of brain development, and already heightened alertness will make it worse. So we really need to make sure that we connect, we make social groups happen, we actually have a whole load of developmental opportunities to help brain development, because it's nice. We've got good news. The brain is plastic. It will reform and it will take on different tasks. And it's okay to have damage in early age. So long as we're aware of it, we do stuff to mitigate it. And we help that future development happen in a better way.
Well, the brain has an amazing way of re-navigating itself when it needs to.
It's fantastic. So there's hope, and there's no need not to hope. But we have to do stuff. And we have to make sure that we do stuff in terms of making sure those social connections happen and we are understanding and we don't label people as naughty or ill or anything like that, but they need some help to develop better in terms of those social connections.
So I think it might have been your good self who suggested about over a year ago now it was a good idea to see things like the government partnering up with the Christchurch City Council. They match the funding for, you know, social wellbeing programs in the city. But I don't know how you feel. I'm frustrated to know that we've got that money still sitting there 1 year on while the bureaucrats still continue to decide how to use that money. I mean, to me, that seems extraordinary. It seems cruel on the people of Christchurch that we've got money there, but yet we've got people in Wellington and Christchurch bickering over how best to use that money for wellbeing programs and initiatives.
Absolutely. It's really frustrating. And we in Christchurch, especially in the youth sector, but also in the child and youth sector and the primary schools, we all have some great ideas. But Wellington says it's our money, so we'll say what happens. And that's been so ever since 2011. And that's really re-victimised the people of Christchurch because we've been made to not have any power. So, you know, if you're a victim of a natural disaster or of abuse, which is nothing, you know, you didn't cause it, it was done to you, then it's really hard not to keep thinking as a victim. But what we need is opportunities for people to stop being victims and actually take power into their own hands and do stuff. But we need that to be facilitated because, you know, that costs money and it costs resources. So the job, I think, is to help Christchurch citizens not to be victims anymore of whatever and facilitate that growth of being able to do things ourselves.
I agree.
Take our ideas and help them happen.
And, you know, we've got extraordinary ideas that come out of the city, things to help people get through, you know, transitional projects, community groups, those garden things, dance-o-mat, whatever you call them. I think all those types of almost temporary things help.
In gender's community. And Kathleen Liberty's study in primary schools have come up with some great ideas of things we can do. But, you know, they have to scratch around for philanthropy to fund them.
Well, that money's available. It's just we've got bureaucrats that won't dish it out because they're... Don't get me started. Dr. Sue Bagshaw from 298, you feel my frustration, Youth Health Centre.
I'm with you there.
It's disgusting, frankly. But nice to speak with you. I thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.